Paddy Power are giving away a completely free £5 bet on the first race on day 1 and 2 and any race on day 3 if Cheltenham. Don't feel like a punter, feel like a favourite. Paddy Power. Max one £5 free bet per customer per day. T's and C's apply. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to a very special edition of Road to Cheltenham. We asked you, our loyal viewers, to choose which races you would like Ruby and I to look back on, the famous Cheltenham Festival races of the past. And we have picked four from the ones that you picked out, the most popular ones. And Ruby, I'm really looking forward to this nostalgia, a trip down memory lane, I think, via the four key championship races.
I think some of them will make easier viewing for me, Lydia, than others will. But yeah, definitely some good choices from our viewers. Can't say that the four I'd have picked, but this is a show for our viewers.
Absolutely right. And I was saying to you that they made me unashamedly blub, and you just cannot understand that from your perspective. Can you?
I think everybody has different memories of different events, and they are all individually great races to watch.
They are. Okay, we're going to kick off straight away with the 2005 Champion Hurdle. And we'll show you the horses, that the runners and riders for this race. And we should characterise where all the relative horses stood going into it, Ruby. So Hardy Eustace is the title holder. He had won the 2004 Champion Hurdle. He somehow went off at 33-1, having won the previous season's RSA. These days it'd be the Ballymore. And he was wearing blinkers for the first time. And on that occasion, Conor O'Dwyer controlled the race from the front. So he's the title holder going into this.
He is the title holder and was well fancied as well. Actually, just when I was looking at it earlier, Lydia, and I was thinking it's 16 years ago, but to think there was seven really dominant Irish horses in it and none of them trained by Willie Mullins, Gordon Elliott or Henry de Bromhead. You'd Hardy Eustace, Desi Hughes, Brave Inca, Colin Murphy, back in front, Edward O'Grady, Essex, Michael O'Brien, Max Joy, Jesse Harrington, Al Ella, John Quealy, and according to 12, Paul Nolan. It's only 16 years ago to think back Ireland could be that dominant in one race and the big yards that we have now not involved. So that's one part of the nostalgia, I suppose. But Hardy was the favourite and the defending champion, but he had Brave Inca, who'd won the Supreme the year before.
Yes, absolutely. And that, at the time, that was being talked of as a lesser renewal. He beat War of Attrition that day.
We'll go on to win the Gold Cup. It's funny. It's gas. And then, yeah, and Brave Inca. There were two similar horses, though. Neither of them were really flashy. They were two dour, galloping two-milers. They were stayers more so than speed horses.
Yeah, and he'd been suffering from seconditis that season. And the horse that had come through was Max Joy. He had been a vastly progressive handicapper the previous season, but he was lining up here in this Champion Hurdle as a dual grade one winning hurdler.
Yeah, he was. And Barry Gowsey could have had the choice of numerous horses here. And he plumbed for Max Joy. He could have ridden Essex, who AP McCoy ended up on. He even could have ridden back in front, who I ended up on. So, Barry had the choice. He had plumbed for Max Joy. Barry Cash was obviously on Brave Inca. According to Twa, he was another progressive handicapper. John Cullen was riding him. And Al Ella, who would go on to be so dominant at Aintree over 2.5 miles for John Quealy, Timmy Murphy was riding him.
Max Joy making his course debut here. Back in front, you just mentioned, was the winner of the Supreme back in 2003 under Norman Williamson, beat Kicking King by 10 lengths. And he had been Ireland's leading hope the previous season, but he'd got sidelined with injury.
He had, and he'd come back to win the Bula, as it was then, probably should be now, the international hurdle. He had won that, but obviously that was on the new course, and it looked, looking at him, well, as this race plays on, I rode him, so that's my memory of it, that he wanted a bit further. But, like, yeah, he was also a leading player, but I think Rooster Booster was the big English runner, wasn't he?
Yes. Yeah, but he'd been trounced in the Christmas Hurdle, hadn't he, by a certain Archibald, who is a Marmite horse, I think. Some people love those, you know, floaters, strong travellers that come in late. But then, you know, we'd seen him in the County Hurdle last season, hadn't we? And he cruised to the front two out and then
trotted, basically. Paul Carberry picked it up on him at the second last, and he was the one horse I missed at the top of the show there, to make it 8 Irish horses here, no me training him, obviously. But Archibald was such a strong traveller. He won the Christmas Hurdle in Kempton, as you said, and Kempton really suited him. Flat track. He's a brilliant jumper, yeah. Archibald. And then I think the new course definitely was the undoing of him in the county, as well as, like Paul would say, himself and Noel were after having a bit of a disagreement over something earlier in the day, and Noel wanted him handier. And I think Noel and Paul will both tell you that story, two different versions of it, but it's an interesting one. And, you know, Archibald, he was just a really fast horse. And for all the names he was called, I actually think he was the absolute opposite to what most people thought he was. I just thought he was too honest.
Really? Go on, explain.
What he just gave you everything he had before you even asked.
Too much. So absolutely, if he could have just held a bit back a bit longer.
He whatever he had to give, he gave it to you. And that was it. It just, there was nothing off the bridle with Archibald. And all the names you got called down the years, I was thinking, I think he's the opposite. He's a fast horse who just gives everything he has.
He was amazing in the Morgiana. I just remember him just utterly unextended to beat back in front. And that's the setup then coming into this. So you've got the well-named Hardy Eustace. And as much of the chat on this occasion was whether he could pull up off the same tactics, whether he could replicate those tactics. And was he going to, was Conor O'Dwyer going to set a faster pace this time around to try and draw out whatever sting might have been left in Archibald?
Yeah, and I can remember that chat pre the race and going to the start, aware of that Conor had gotten it pretty easy the year before in front, and we got below to the start and Conor lined up in front. I'd say AP was pretty aware of it too, because he goes forward in Essex, so does Barry Cash and Brad Vinca. We all walk out behind him. Now you're still thinking none of the three of those are going to make the running, so we just sit as close as we can to Hardy Eustace. But as you walk out onto the track and Conor is dictating it, he almost preempts the start here. Barry Cash, Brave Inca goes to charge forward and he has to pull Brave Inca back. But as he does, Conor almost takes the initiative on Hardy Useless. See him jig-jogging, Barry Cash has to pull back a little of Brave Inca. And before the wrestlers are going, Conor was gone. And he had two or three lengths of it from out, as soon as he got out the tape. See the gap he has straight away? And he just rolls down to the first. And he got a flyer out at the first. But Everton jumps the first pretty well. Now, Roos the Booster is a considerable distance behind your eventual winner at this stage. Obviously, he was a keen going horse. That was the way he liked to be ridden. Inter Sky Falcon was back there with him. But like, it is the harder track to make up ground on. Now, I know he won a Champion Hurdle, but he was a county winner as well. And definitely riding horses, it's easier to ride them that way on the new course than the old course, Roos the Booster. But as we jump the second hurdle and we turn to climb up the hill, it looks an even enough gallop here, Lydia. My memory of it is not the clearest, but there's nobody keen. All the horses behind Hardy Eustace, everyone's hands are pretty much down on the horses' necks. So there's no one getting carted. No individual horse wants to go any faster. But Conor slows it here, up around the bend, past the stands, uphill. Look, lots of people on the front end, slow races down at this stage. But Conor slows him right down. And then as we start to quicken and we run down off the hill here, into the back straight to the third hurdle in the Champion Hurdle, on the outside in the purple and yellow is Brave Inca. He's going to make his first mistake in the race. And that kind of put him on the back foot. It's funny where you can make mistakes and where you can't. And this hurdle here is one of the ones that counts. Because you're running down and everything gets going a bit faster, this is a bad hurdle to miss, because you just lose ground when harder horses are quickening away from you.
Let's take a look at Brave Inca's mistake. You can see Archibald on the right-hand side there with the sheepskin noseband patiently ridden.
Yeah, he just, not even makes a mistake. Just when he was wrong, he's deliberate. And he stutters on takeoff. And it just puts him from being beside Essex to behind Essex. Now, All Ella is the first horse that's going to struggle. See Timmy Murphy hitting All Ella, slap on the shoulder. So people say, oh, it was a steadily run race. It was too fast. It was too fast a race for All Ella on the same. Brave Inca, or back in front, is not keen. Barry is a lovely position on Max Joy. And as we jump, that's five out, heading up to the fourth last. You see Roos the Booster has passed the two big outsiders. And the field is beginning to tighten as we climb up to the fourth last hurdle. This hurdle is key, and everyone knows it. You have to jump the fourth last to hold your position onto the top of the hill, and all of these horses ping this hurdle.
What are you thinking at this stage? You're sitting in third on back in front.
I don't remember, but I don't ever remember thinking I was going to win either. I don't have that memory of it. And you'll see now when we turn off the top of the hill, I'm one of the first ones that's flat to the boards, back in front. I'd never ridden them before. but he didn't have any turn of foot. My hands are starting to move as Connor starts to pull on the petrol in front, and I readily can't go with him. Turn off the corner, I'm squeezing, AP moves up on Essex, Brave Inc is off it, Barry's travelling well, and Max Joy, all Ella on the outside has been off it most of the way. John Cullen in the pink sleeves is after switching in, and Paul is Cantor and Archibald sneaking behind us. This is three out. I'm beaten, so I switch in, and Paul has to come around me on the yellow sleeves. Essex is just in front of him, but this hurdle here, watch Archibald all the way down. He's behind Essex, beside back in front. But watch the jump Archibald gets here. Paul Carver gives him a squeeze the last minute, flies it, jumps through what's not that big a gap, but he jumps by back in front and Essex and puts himself in pole position. Now, in 2021, Paul Carver would stay where he is, but back in 2005, the last hurdle is not that far from the bend, so he switches out to jump the last hurdle, jumps it and lands upside. Now, if it's 2021, he's still behind Conrad O'Wire because the last hurdle is somewhere around there. Then he switches out. But he gets out because of where the last position to the last hurdle were and gets beside Archibald. But now, Archibald has nothing left to give. Hardy Eustace keeps finding, and the closer they get to the line, the further back Archibald is going.
It's an audacious ride, really, from Paul Carberry from the outside, isn't it? Paul had said the more you hold on to him, the better he is. But it's actually Conor O'Dwyer who has dictated this race from start to finish. And Paul's done everything he possibly can on Archibald.
To me, he always did. And look, I know punters will say, well, why didn't he send him? Why didn't he get after him? Just watch the year before. Watch the county hurdle. He sent him off the bend and he's beaten before he gets halfway to the last hurdle. I just think on a different day, I think on the track now, with the last hurdle where it is now compared to then, that was the old summer position. They flipped them around and the last hurdle is much further up the track. Would definitely suit Archibald better. And I think if it was now when Paul jumped the last, he'd have sent Archibald.
Yes.
Don't think he'd have won, but there never would have been half the controversy.
I don't think he'd have won either.
No, neither do I.
I think it would have been just as a remarkable champion hurdle, but for different reasons. I wonder whether we can take it again from two out. I think the silkiness of Archibald's jumping is one thing that's forgotten in the sort of concentration on his high head carriage, his jaunty head carriage and his strong travelling. His jumping was superb as well. And Hardy Eustace is also a superb jumper. I love the way that he came up brilliantly two out himself as well, because he has to nail that second last hurdle.
He does, because he watched him, see, he pricked his ears. Conor Waitley spotted a stride, two strides away. The last two strides, he asked him. Brave Inca jumps up beside him and almost headed him before the bend. Conor gets it into his right hand. And to be fair to Hardy Eustace, he was tough, but so was Brave Inca. Like, these were very good horses. And all the way to the last, he's hammering tongs to the last, spots the stride, go on, pings it, and he never flinches. Whereas, like, he was fair, Antipost fair for a Coral Cup as well. There was the argument, he had won at Ballymore, that Hardy was the strongest there, and he ultimately he was. I mean, if you go back 12 months, the winner had won the champion hurdle, the horse in the middle got beaten the county, and the horse in the outside won the Supreme. Mm. The strongest there won the race.
Mm. And of course, it set up for the following year. It meant that Hardy Eustace was a dual champion hurdle winner. He was going to try and get the three to emulate Istabrak and See You Then and other horses in the past. And next time around, he had his crown taken off him. He went down fighting against Brave Inca and Max Joy, who lasted out much longer second time around at Cheltenham.
He did. Max Joy was just an older horse. Brave Inca, I think, with the experience, people often don't understand when you go from novice company to championship company. And Brave Inca improved for the experience he gained. He became a better jumper as he went on, Brave Inca. To me, he was always a little stuttery in those races. When he was wrong, he wasn't quick enough. To take a half stride for Brave Inca meant losing momentum, but he learned to take a half stride at speed just with experience, and that's basically what flipped it around. The advantage Hardy had was his jumping. He was a hardened horse by then, whereas Brave Inca wasn't.
Yeah, absolutely. And also they used the switching of headgear, didn't they? They'd put on the blinkers for the first time when he won the champion hurdle first time round. They'd left them off all this season, put them on for the champion hurdle, and they tried the switch again the following season.
Your memory of it is clearer than mine, Lydia.
Good research. looking at this year's champion hurdle, are there any parallels that you can draw from what we've just seen there?
I think they'll go faster. I think there's, when you looked at that race, you had one guaranteed front runner which was hardly useless. And you had a couple of horses that were going to be ridden handy back in front, Essex, Brave Inca. Whereas this year, I think there are more than one genuine front runner. You have Not So Sleepy. You have Goshen. You have Aspire Tower could, but he's most certainly going to force it. Honeysuckle will be up there. There are a couple of horses in this year's Champion Hurdle that will, won't be allowing one horse to dictate it. They will go and go, I think.
So that was the 2005 Champion Hurdle, won by the great Hardy Eustace, such a fantastically hardy horse, trained by the great Desi Hughes and ridden by Conor O'Dwyer. Right, this involves one of my favourite ever horses of all time. I was a sucker for types like Hardy Eustace, but very much so for Viking Flagship. And this is Viking Flagship's first win in the 1994 Queen Mother Champion Chase for Adrian Maguire and David Nicholson. I loved this horse, Ruby. I loved him.
He was one of those horses that I remember in my childhood growing up, Lydia, watching him winning Melling Chase, the Champion Chases, and watching different people riding them. He's never just associated with one horse either. I can picture Richard Dunwoody riding him, Adrian Maguire riding him, Charlie Swan riding him. He's a horse that had many jockeys, but always delivered. Flamboyant jumping, stamina, and always looking like he gave 108% or 10%.
Loads of guts at the finishing end of a race. And, you know, it was fences that really made him. I mean, he was a maiden in 18 starts on the flat. Pretty decent as a hurdler, but, you know, fences were his thing.
They were. And when we watched this 94 Champion Chase in a minute, it was actually his jumping that surprised me. I had to play it back twice before we did this show to watch him at a couple of his fences. But I think it was his jump at the last that ultimately is what you remember Viking Flagship for.
Yeah, absolutely. But we've got a couple of Champion Chase winners in the lineup. In fact, we've got three Champion Chase winners already in the lineup. Deep Sensation, first of all, who is the title holder. He was fourth in the 92 Arkle, progressive all the way through 1993, ending up winning this and the Melling Chase. But coming into this race, he had a string of seconds.
Yeah, and funny, you're going back and look, even looking at those things yesterday, but my memory of Deep Sensation is the opposite of Viking Flagship. I always remember him as a strong traveller, a flashy type who either won impressively or was worn out of it. He was a really good horse. Declan Murphy used to ride him, but my memory of him has just always been flashy and not quite been as tough as Viking Flagship.
That's my memory of him too. The other thing that took me back when I was looking at this was, okay, so he was the reigning Queen Mother Champion Chase winner, also won the Melling Chase at the back end of the previous season. He ran six times prior to running in this Queen Mother Champion Chase. How times have changed.
They have, but most horses didn't. I think, Lydia, you can go back a generation before that and you'll find they ran 10 times. But that's the generational change. And white noise is the improvement of facilities. I think everybody's horse is full stop or fitter. And therefore, the competition from October is much different.
Remittance Man was a past winner of this as well. He was a great novice chaser and beaten in six starts. He won the Arkle, beating Uncle Ernie. And then the following season, his only defeat came when Nicky Henderson tried the King George and he finished third behind the fellow, but he managed to win this in 1992.
He did. And I suppose my memories of him as Richard Dunwoody riding him and wonderful pictures on the BBC, watching Remittance Man, such a powerful, good-looking horse. I'm not sure it was Richard injured or suspended, but he didn't ride in this race. Nick Fitz rides Remittance Man. Obviously, Adrian was in David Nicholson's den. He rides Viking Flagship. Charlie Swan rides Wonder Man. I'm nearly sure Richard was injured, but I can just always picture Richard O'Muddy and Remittance Man, and there's a couple of great still pictures where there's not even a fence in sight. You can see Remittance Man, Richard O'Muddy perched behind him, looking up between his ears. There's not even a fence. That's my memories of Remittance Man.
Same, absolutely the same. He missed the second half of the 92-93 season with a tendon issue, and he'd only run once this season going into this race we're about to see, when he'd beaten Deep Sensation in the Emblem Chase at Kempton. So he'd come back from quite a long layoff due to that issue. So he was on the comeback trail really coming into this. And then, of course, there was Travado, his stable companion, ridden by Jamie Osborne, who'd won the 1993 Arkle, beaten Wonder Man. And this season, he'd won the Holden Gold Cup and the Peterborough, beating Deep Sensation.
Yeah, well, obviously the Peterborough's 2.5, so you're coming back down a trip for both. But he was a good winner of the Arkell, flashy type. But even just looking at them and the names of the guys riding them, like Jamie Osborne, Mark Dwyerod, Sibylla, and Peter Niven was riding Space Fair, Simon McNeil's on Catabatic. It's a great race to watch.
It really is. So Travado was coming here off a fall in Barton Banks, King George. And we should just, of course, mention Catabatic. You've mentioned Simon McNeil. Josh Gifford's Catabatic, who won the Grand Annual, who won the Queen Mother Champion Chase by 7 lengths from Waterloo Boy in 1991. Second to Remittance Man the following year. Third to Deep Sensation the year before. And he was back again this time round.
Yeah, pushing on in years. But look, another wonderful two-mile chaser. And I think when you look at, and even now, Lydia, when you look at races, horses, it's almost cyclical. They seem to come in bunches. And when you're looking at different races in this year's Cheltenham Festival, you're thinking to maybe to next year and a couple of what looked like outstanding novices taking on what looked like some cracking open horses.
Yeah, well, let's wallow in some nostalgia, shall we? Sir Peter O'Sullivan calls this race. There's the off. And in the blue colours, that is Space Fair and Peter Niven.
Yeah, and look, to seem to go a really good gallop down to the first. It's amazing how technology has improved. Could you imagine that shot now? There'd be uproar as the camera is shaking in the wind. But Calabatic is right down the inside. Mark Dwyer's taking his time in the red on Sibylla out the back. Charlie Swan is in the orange colours in the middle on Wonder Man. But they're going a good gallop. They're spread out across the track. There's no one definitive horse taking control of this race. It looks pretty even. Adrian Maguire's in the middle of the field on Viking Flagship. And these horses ping up over what was then the first three fences. Obviously, the second last fence is not going to appear just roundabout now because it's around a bend there. And this is the last with a circuit to go. And the race is starting to take shape. And Space Fair, Peter Niven is starting to press on. But nothing really happens till they get to the fifth. They all ping that. Marcus dropped to the very back and Sibylla in there now. But as they're around the bend here, they'll all ping this fence as well.
At the back in the yellow with the black hoops, that's Deep Sensation and Declan Murphy. Just ahead of him with the red cap and the yellow sleeves, that is Remittance Man with Mick Fitzgerald.
Yeah, it was obviously a big ride for Mick Fitzgerald back then. I don't think he wasn't Nicky Stable jockey at that stage, so it was a big, big opportunity for him. And he's sitting right on Flagship's tail. But this is what I meant about when I watched this race earlier. These are things you don't remember about these races, but watch Viking Flagship down here at this first fence. And when AJ Maguire gives him a squeeze to go, watch how he jams on and he ends up landing about fourth. He was no way. You don't remember Viking Flagship makes some mistakes. And then he goes to the water jump and Adrian grabs a hold of him and gives him a squeeze and he puts down and takes another stride. I'm thinking, did Viking Flagship really do that? Look, pops the water jump.
We've had Altior doing that kind of thing.
They get to the next fence, Travado on the outside in the yellow and blue diamonds and the white sleeves. He dives a bit at this first ditch, gets there, but he really has to reach for it. And Catabatic, they say fences were very solid back in those days. Watch what Catabatic does to this one with his hind legs. He lets fly in front and drags himself straight out through it. Stands way too far off, but he had no problem parting the birch. They were all very good at the next fence. And then Remittance Man at the eighth, they're all pretty good, but Remittance Man is really good. Just the last ditch, sorry, it's this fence. Fitzy spots a stride here and Remittance Man absolutely pings it for him, sits in on him and wings the ditch, puts him into a great position. But watch now for Deep Sensations. He comes through. Declan Murphy looks like he's going to go between Mick Fitzgerald and Jamie Osborne on the outside of Remittance Man. But Jamie pushes up on the outside and pushes Declan Murphy back in. And he ends up coming down the hill and going the inside of Mick Fitzgerald when they straighten off the bend. He's to switch in and down they come to the third last and they're stepping on the gas. And just keep an eye on Remittance Man. Black colours, yellow sleeves. Fitzy down to the third last again. They're starting to race. Jumps are required. And he gives Remittance Man a squeeze, but he doesn't have the horse. Takes another stride, catches the top, crumbles over. And here you're thinking, wow, Deep Sensation. He's travelling so easy compared to the others. But look how close Jamie Osborne gets to Declan Murphy and how close he pushes him to Adrian Maguire. They weren't exactly going to give each other much room, were they? Right down there, bang tight. That's really good race riding. Keep it all as tight as you can. And even round the bend, Jamie doesn't want to be any more than three horses wide. So he keeps Declan really close to Adrian, off the bend to the last fence. And you're still thinking, it's Deep Sensations. But Viking Flagship does what he always did. And he gets a brilliant jump here at the last. Adrian Maguire spots one. It's all duck or no dinner. Go on. Wings it. And the height he got as well. to get the power through the air, and he just outstays the other two. He's third at that stage. Declan Murphy now goes for deep sensation, but I can see why my memory of him is just being that little bit soft. And Viking flagship just out battles him. Travado keeps on best to be second.
This is such an iconic race for me, and the way that Viking flagship just digs in, and that jump at the last, and just up the hill as well. I was making an absolute exhibition of myself in a betting shop watching this race. but I didn't notice for ages. I'd quite like to have a look at that race from three out again, just because, not just because of the fall of Remittance Man, but also how Adrian Maguire asks Viking flagship three out as well. He really asks him at three out, and again, he really comes up for him. And also the sighting of the second last, which of course is different now.
I mean, there's eight runners, Lydia, and they're all in with a shout down to the third last. So you can imagine how competitive it is. And everyone is trying to hold their position. And if you miss, you're going to be out of it. Adrian fires Viking flagship. Remittance Man misses. Now you have three. There was eight horses involved going to it. This race is broken completely in half at one fence. And again to the second last. But how tight Jamie keeps Declan Murphy to Adrian. Adrian has to ping it. And Viking, he keeps the revs up. He wasn't long, but Viking flagship was very, very quick at it. But that was the old second last fence. I always found it a great fence. There was plenty of fallers at it, but times change and things move on. But I must say, I am watching it. Charlie Swan is on Wonder Man back and forth watching it. I admire the riding, how tight they rode, how tight they kept each other, how they made it competitive. I admire that.
Yeah. And as you say, that sort of, you know, deep sensation in the sort of Archibald role, Viking flagship in the Hardy Eustace role, albeit that he's been headed and has to fight back, and Travado getting past deep sensation but not quite managing to get past Viking flagship. What you were mentioning about the different sighting of the last hurdle in the champion hurdle and how that might have affected the way that race panned out. How might it have affected this race with the new sighting, the modern sighting of two out?
I don't think it has the same effect as such. I think it probably would have suited maybe Viking flagship a bit more, because you probably race now a little earlier and you jump the third last with such a long run down in front of you. They probably race off the hill even more. Whereas before, the ones that were going well could up the ante, but they still had to hold a bit to make sure they got over the second last, the old second last. Whereas now they tend to probably go a bit faster from a bit further out. So it probably would have suited Viking flagship even more.
Mm-hmm. And how about this season? Again, can you draw any comparisons from any of those runners to the horses that we're going to see in the Queen Mother Champion Chase this season?
I don't know, Lydia, can you? I don't think there's a deep sensation amongst them. Viking flagship, could that be Altior? Fighting back, tough, could possibly be. Travado, Shaq and Pursuit. Don't think so.
No, it's gonna develop slightly differently, isn't it?
I think it will, yeah. I do, and I think it will develop. I can't see eight horses heading to the third last in this year's champion chase in the heap.
Spacefair, the leader from Viking flagship, travelling well just towards his outside. Right over on the outside is Travado with Remittance Man upside him. And Remittance Man a faller there. The Remittance Man has gone at that one. He's left Travado in the lead. Travado from Viking flagship over on the far right between horses is deep sensation, travelling well. As they come down to the second last, Travado lands in the lead from Viking flagship and deep sensation. Then behind them come Wonder Man. They're racing round the home turn now. And as they do so, deep sensation traveling very smoothly in the center over on the far side. Viking flagship on the near side, it's Travado. Travado on the near side, on the far side, Viking flagship between horses, deep sensation, a previous winner over the last, and Travado on the near side and deep sensation, and Viking flagship on the far side, it's Travado on the near side, deep sensation in the center, Viking flagship over on the far side, it's anybody's race as they race to the line. Viking flagship over on the far side has taken a fractional advantage. Viking flagship has just won it from Travado. Deep sensation is third, and four Wonder Man, and five Catabatic, and six with Spacefair, and seven and last was Sibylline with Remittance Man the Faller. And so Adrian Maguire gets his name on the Ritz Club Charity Trophy board, and the result of the 1994 Queen Mother Champion Chase, first number seven, Viking Flagship.
So Viking Flagship, one of the greats of that era. And of course, he went on to win this race again by five lengths in 1995, and then win one of the best ever races. Nobody please argue the 1995 Melling. But then he came back. He was second in the Champion Chase in 96, third in 97, fifth in 1998, his final ever race. One of the greats of the era, really, Ruby, in terms of not in, in his strings of victory, and not even in the level of form, but more in his sort of his tenacity, the way he jumped, and his longevity.
Yeah, and as I said, Lydia, I can just picture so many people riding him. I can even picture AP riding him. I think in 95 or 6, I think AP won him an entry. But 96, Charlie, Richard Dunwoody, AP, Adrian Maguire. You can just picture so many people riding him as well.
I've got some bonus nostalgia for you all at home. This is the closing stages of the 1995 Melling Chase, called by Sir Peter O'Sullivan.
And it's Southolt from Viking Flagship still cruising in behind him, his Deep Sensation, Martha's Son, coming back into contention on the near side as they come down now towards the third last. Southolt landed in the lead from Viking Flagship, Martha's Son, Deep Sensation, and then Nakia coming down to the final ditch now. Southolt the leader from Viking Flagship and Martha's Son at the last ditch. And it's Southolt and Martha's Son with between horses. Viking Flagship, Deep Sensation making ground over on the far side. Viking Flagship takes a fractional lead, but here comes Martha's Son on the near side. Four of them in contention at the final fence. Martha's Son takes a fractional advantage. It's just how they jump the last. Martha's Son lands in the lead from Viking Flagship. Deep Sensation getting up over on the far side. Deep Sensation and Martha's Son and Viking Flagship as they come to the line. It's a photo finish between Viking Flagship and Deep Sensation. The photo between Viking Flagship and Deep Sensation. Adrian Maguire thinks he's just got up in the closing stages.
And Viking Flagship leads post. Absolutely brilliant. Beating Deep Sensation and Martha's Son. One of the races of the ages. Going to move to more modern times now. The 2012 Stayers Hurdle, then of course called the World Hurdle. And this involves the man who is co-presenting with me here, Ruby Walsh. He's on board Big Bucks for Paul Nicholls. And Big Bucks, Ruby, on this occasion was seeking an unprecedented fourth success in the Stayers Hurdle to eclipse Ingalls Drever's three-timer that he achieved in 2008.
Yeah, and he was an incredible horse, Big Bucks. He was an okay jumper, but he had an unbelievable engine. And look, from the time he beat Punches Towns in his first one until he beat Valor La Vedette in his last one. That unbeaten run he went on 16 races was, I think it was, pretty much following the same pattern every year. But he was an incredible racehorse. And look, it all started, I suppose, with falling over fences. I had won the 3 mile chase on him at Aintree the previous year, novice chase. He didn't jump well and got up close home to win. And then he went to the Hennessy and unseated Sam Thomas at the last. And I don't know, was he even going to win, was he?
I think he had every chance, but it is one of the most significant unseats in racing history, isn't it? Because it changed the course of Big Buck's career.
It did. Paul switched him back to hurdles. He won the Cleeve. Could have been a handicap at the time, maybe. It wasn't a handicap, but it was definitely
handicap,
wasn't.
Then a Cleeve. Then
handicap,
a Cleeve.
Yeah. Then a Cleeve. And he went on to win the World Hurdle, but he just had so much stamina. He didn't like being in front. Not he didn't like being in front. He just pulled up and he was in front. He was a harder horse to ride in front. But as he progressed through the years, and I don't know, gained confidence or got used to racing, he definitely became more easy to ride closer to the pace. And also people became more aware of the fact that the only way you might beat him was to actually follow him, because you most certainly weren't going to outstay him.
That's the interesting thing, the sort of developing response to Big Bucks, because people have become very aware, as you say, of how he did things. Because from that point of that unseat and the switch to hurdles, going into this race that we're about to see, he was unbeaten. He had won the 09 World Hurdle, beating Punchestown, the following year beating Time for Rupert, the time after that beating Gone Crew. Here he was looking for his 16th consecutive victory over hurdles. His ultimate sequence would be of 18, and that's since, of course, been eclipsed by Altior. So he was looking to eke equals Sir Ken's long-standing record. That 16 unbeaten run had stood since the 1950s, you know, when that three times champion hurdle winner managed it. But as you say, because they'd seen, everybody had seen so much of him, other jockeys and punters were trying to devise ways in which the Bucks might get beaten.
But you should, and that's what tactics are, and that's what you have to do. Is like, you can't keep doing the same thing if it's not working. So you have to try something. And a lot of the guys that went out and girls to ride this race were aware of that. And, you know, Oscar Whiskey was stepping up to 3 miles, Thousand Stars, Mikhail Dagenet, So Young, Valor of a Death, Dynast. There was a whole clatter of horses, but it's fairly evident when you roll the tape, none of them are going to be in front of Big Bucks.
Well, Oscar Whiskey and Thousand Stars, who you mentioned, they'd finished third and fourth behind Hurricane Fly in the previous year's champion hurdle. Thousand Stars had gone on to win the French champion hurdle. You rode him. So this was the first time outside of France that he'd tried 3 miles.
Yeah, he'd won the Kate. He won a county hurdle on him. And he'd been runner-up to Oscar Whiskey in an entry hurdle. And they both lined up here to take on Big Bucks. And I don't know. Obvious, they were obvious dangers. I mean, the French champion hurdle, as the Stars won two of them, he won a winter and autumn champion hurdle as well. There's no doubt about his stamina, and we know what Oscar Whiskey was capable of. They were good horses, and I think 2012, I think we were having a pretty ordinary Cheltenham Festival, myself and Paul Nicholls, if memory serves me right.
And you mentioned Volala Vedette. We also ought to talk about Colm Murphy's mare. She'd been third to Quivega in the mare's hurdle. She'd been up to 3 miles at the end of that season, again finished behind Quivega. But she'd improved at this trip over 3 miles and for the tongue tie that this season, because it helped her settle.
Yeah, she switched off. And she was obviously a high-class mare. And the way Andrew Lynch would ultimately ride her was to perfection, really. And she gave Big Bucks, she gave him a race, and you, Lydia?
She did. And she was unconsidered 20-1 shot coming into this, because you had floored her on Zydepoor in her previous start. Smad Place was a 5-year-old who'd run 10th in the Triumph Hurdle. He was a relatively unconsidered 20-1 shot as well, but he was trying the trip for the first time. So there were plenty of them lining up. And there was something a little bit different about Big Bucks as well, because he'd taken in the Cleave as well as the long distance hurdle and the long walk going into it. Normally he'd just stick to the Ascot and Newbury races on his preceding two seasons. So here we are down at the start.
Yeah, look, and as I was always worried all week, there'd be no pace, but Cross Kennan lined up to make it down the inside, 5 Dream on his outside. They were the two to go forward, but neither were genuine grade one horses, Lydia. So how far were they going to bring you? And all the dangers lined up behind you. Mikhail Dagenet in the pink, Murad in the yellow, Thousand Stars in the red, Oscar Whiskey in the blue and white Diablo outside him, So Young in the purple, Dynast, and look where Voller of a Lavadette is, second grade, Smad Place. And down to the first hurdle, it looks like we're going a good enough gallop, but there's plenty of horses keen. Morad is tanking, Dynast is tanking, so is Thousand Stars. Oscar Whiskey is just about settled, and Andrew Lynch has sat off that far back to make sure Voller of a Dead settles. Now, this race doesn't change much for quite a while, so we'll wheel it on there to the back to where we almost started, and it takes a bit of time, but again, nothing from where we were a mile ago has changed. Cross Kennan is still in front, 5 Dream, is pretty much going as fast as he's able, and we're quite well bunched for the Stairs Hurdle. Big Bucks right down the inside, jumps that hurdle, but it's also in the back of my mind that Thousand Stars have won a county, Oscar Whiskey was a 2.5 miler, so could Dynast have been, So Young was a quick horse. I was aware going out that none of them had the stamina Big Bucks had, and at some stage I was going to need to drag them, and that's what happens when we face down here. Now it gets a little bit tight at the back of this hurdle. Cross Kennan jumps off to his right, leaves a gap on his inside, and myself and my sister have a row over who's going to get in there, but eventually we both fit.
She's on Murad in the light yellow and blue colours.
Yeah, see her. Cross Kennan jumps out, Murad pings, I saw this Big Bucks. Cross Kennan goes to come back in, the wing of defence is coming, but too late, we're there now at this stage, and Big Bucks is in front. I don't think he'd ever been in front as far from home, but he had company, and as I said, he had progressed through his career and became an easier horse to ride closer to the pace. Now Paul Townend's on Thousand Stars, and he has an excellent way back. He's directly behind me. Barry Geraghty is nicely poised just outside Paul, and Baller of a Dead is still at the back. Dynast is starting to struggle a little bit. Mikhail Dagenet probably wasn't the horse he was, the horse that had won the Ballymore anyway. but up to the third last hurdle here. And watch Big Bucks. He'd never done this in his life, but he just gets there. He steps at this, which was so uncharacteristic. Normally, he would gallop on and take another stride, but he stands way off for him. Now, that mightn't be too far for a Hurricane Fly or an Epitant, but for Big Bucks, that was a long way from the hurdle because that was his problem. He didn't have much scope, and he just about got there. But now you're trying to press it on. I'm looking back. I know Barry is behind me. Paul's behind him. And I want them to be close enough that if I start to build the momentum, that they're going to have to keep following me. There's no point in me kicking clear and they just letting me gallop off in front and pull up. So I'm trying to drag those horses with me to turn this into more of a stamina test.
Yeah, so you're just sort of pulling them, stretching them gradually.
Gradually, yeah, exactly. So all the way down the hill here, and I'm trying to wind them up. And they're both directly behind me, and neither of them are going to take me on. No one's going to take me on. I know they're not. So I need to drag this to make sure there's not a sprint. You see Big Bucks, his two ears are pricked as he heads on to the crown of the bend. And you could never really like to be off the bridle that far out in the new course, but that was just the nature of this race. And as soon as I send him here and I start to drift right for the stands rail, Barry Geraghty goes left. And that brings Andrew Lynch with him. But Barry doesn't really want to be anywhere near me. So he goes left to get away from me. He knows getting anywhere close to me is not going to aid his chance. Andrew Lynch keeps further away. I take a peek under my left arm and see where they are. So I decide, well, sure, if you're going to go over there, I'll go to ye. But Andrew Lynch spots me coming. And as I go to get to him, he switches. Now, I can't come back on the takeoff side, so I have to wait till I jump it. Now I have to come back to him. So all I want to do is get beside him. Because I know in Big Bucks, it's any bit of company, he's going to find himself again. And he does. I must say, for a losing ride, it was a brilliant ride from Andrew Lynch. But Big Bucks was just an incredible horse.
He was fantastic. And what was that like, the winning a fourth world hurdle at the time?
I'd say it was relief. He was pretty short. I don't know the magnitude of winning a race at the Stairs Hurdle fourth time really sink in. I'm pretty sure it was Paul's first winner of the week. Quiviga might have won earlier in the week for me. But pressure was on, and I don't think any of us were that confident going out. So relief, I think, was the feeling.
And you said there that he didn't really have much scope. What was it that he did have?
An engine, his ability to gallop. Obviously he was a jump horse and ultimately ended up with leg trouble. So it never would have happened for him. But if he was a better jumper, I think he had the ability to be a champion hurdle horse or even an Ascot Gold Cup type horse on the flat. Like, he was an incredible racehorse, but jumping just wasn't his strongest point. And it is jump racing.
I'd quite like to have another look at the closing stages. I mean, we can even go from four out where he stretches, or from the top of the hill, because you have a little look around, don't you, at that point. And I do want to focus on the ride of Andrew Lynch, because it's such a strong one. It's such a cheeky, thoughtful, waiting ride on Vola La Vedette. There he is in the red colours, red spots on his blue sleeves, second last of the main group.
He is, and I can't put myself into Andrew's position, but to ride this race, he's not thinking about where the winning post is or getting to the front. He's only looking at me on Big Bucks and how he knows if he can beat him, he's going to win. So that's all he's watching. So he's now 3, 4, 5 lengths off Big Bucks, and that's all he's judging it off. So he moves to the other side of the track. He doesn't want to come anywhere near Big Bucks. He's put a lot of thought into this, and he's staying over there, but he also wants to stay behind. He only wants to pass Big Bucks if he can, as close to the line as he can. So he stays over. In fact, look at him. He deliberately goes away, and then when I come and I don't look again, I looked under my arm, give Big Bucks a few flicks to get across, and he sees me coming. It was just like playing X's and O's. He's gone the other direction, and he gets right to the stands rail. And when I jump it, then I have to come back. But, you know, it was a great bit of riding. Ultimately, he just didn't have the horse to win. But no. I don't think, when he came back in, could he have done anything else? Most definitely not.
It was a superb race to watch for that reason. Just sort of the way that everybody had thought through the race and was trying to outmaneuver each other, and it playing out that way in the closing stages. In the end, you know, Thousand Stars and Oscar Whiskey, they just were, particularly Oscar Whiskey, just didn't stay, and Thousand Stars didn't really stay in these circumstances.
Well, he was too keen on that occasion, and as he got older, he definitely settled a bit better. And he was a better horse too in France, Lydia, with 10-7 on his back, than he was in England with 11-10.
And then there was Mad Place, who we should mention, who stuck on at 21 for third and went on to be an excellent chaser.
Yeah, and ultimately won a Hennessy or a Ladbrokes Trophy.
Yeah, and just at the age of five there, sticking on really well. What is the meaning of big bucks to you in your career?
Reliable.
Yeah. I guess 18 straight wins would say that.
Yeah.
And we end, of course, with the Gold Cup, the 2008 Gold Cup, this vintage era for staying chasers and the start of the rivalry between Denman and Courto Star. I hadn't really quite appreciated how little Ruby Walsh wants to see this again. You don't want to see this again, do you?
Once was enough for me, Lydia. The live version is my memory of it. But look, it was a great race. It was a great build-up. It was a great time for racing. I wish the actual day that, and I'll explain it as we go on, that things worked out. Not so much the result, but the race, not even the race. I just wish Cotto, the real Cotto, had come to the party. But it was a great time for us.
It was. So if we just give a little potted history of Courto Star. He fell in the 2006 Queen Mother Champion Chase, but he never looked back after that. He won the Old Rowan, the Betfair Chase, dropped down to the Tingle Creek to 2 miles, came up to 3 miles for the King George, and then won the Aon Chase and the 2007 Gold Cup. So that was the previous season. This year, coming into it, he needed the race and was beaten by Moniz Garden in the Old Rowan. He won the Betfair Chase. He won the King George by 11 lengths, a bit of a one-sided race, and the Ascot Chase, trouncing Moniz Garden there, coming into this. And up against him was Denman, Ruby, who'd won the previous year's RSA, and you had ridden him.
I had, and he'd absolutely bolted in, jumped really well, really sharp price favourite. He was in the purple colours of Maggie Finley that year, and then the following year he was back in Paul Barber's colours. He'd won the Hennessy at Newbury with Sam Thomas. I was out injured. He'd bolted in.
Huge
performance. I then won the Savills on him at Leopardstown, quicking up really well to win, and he won the Aon Chase under Sam Thomas again. So, yeah, look, it was billed as the race of an era, I suppose. And the winner was unbelievable on the day.
We should just mention some of the others. Neptune Cologne to the Grey, three for Paul Nichols, who'd won the Punchestown Gold Cup the previous season. Exotic Dancer, who'd been second in the previous year's Gold Cup and had been chasing home Courto Star all season. And Halson Genelade as well, who'd been second in the Welsh Grand National for Alan King and Robert Thornton. Right, should we enjoy this race? Well, I'm going to enjoy this race again. You're going to enjoy this race again. I don't know about Ruby.
I thought we're enjoying it, but look how civilised it was at the start, actually. It was the first thing that struck me. They walk out onto the start for the Gold Cup. It's a long time since I saw them walk that quiet and relaxed to the tape. But look, the big two, I suppose, are pretty close together. Neptune Collange, Mick Fitzgerald, books out in front down the inside. Sam Thomas is just beside him or kind of behind him on them, man. I'm tucked in down the rail on Courto Star. Fistful of Dollars, Halcon Generalade, down the inside is Exotic Dancer, and Nowhere, and the others don't really ever get involved. But look, they went a decent enough gallop. Neptune Collange jumped the first, but watch Cotto here, how he gets quite high and skews in the air, which was a bit unlike him. But that's nothing untoward, I suppose. Up past the stands, round the bend, and everything seems fairly happy for everybody at this stage. The only person who's probably not overly happy is AP and Exotic Dancer. He's racing really keenly. You see his head going from side to side there as AP tries to get him back and get him to switch off. But he's the only one that's struggling to get into a rhythm. The rest of us are relaxed. Fitzy's going a good gallop in front. Sam Thomas is very happy. Cotto seems to be 100%, Fistful of Dollars. It's a good, honest, even race. And I suppose to set it up in people's minds, this is probably what they imagined. Now, with the water jump, you look at the horse in pink with the black, Paul Carberry, on Fistful of Dollars. Not sure he'd seen too many water jumps before, because he has a bit of a look at this one and gets up quite high at it. But other than that, all is straightforward. Next is the ditch. Everyone seems to meet it well within their stride or their rhythm, all the horses, and pop up over it. Sam Thomas gets a good jump out of Denman. But the next fence, both Neptune and Denman absolutely fly this one, whereas Courto Star kind of just pops it. Neptune wins it, Denman pings it, Courto gets in deep, and if you watch as the camera flicks on the landing side, a gap has already opened a bit more from them and Dakota than there was just going to it. They all get in close to the second ditch, which is the next fence coming up, all metered on a half straight, but they all shorten up and no one loses any ground or makes any ground. Chalk is travelling really well in Halcon Generada. And again, at the eighth fence, everyone seems to jump it well.
The field is really quite strung out already at this point.
There were, but I think there was a big gulf to Lydia in class from the horse in front to nowhere. The horse behind that were pretty much to the pin of their collar to be running in a race like this. They swing around to the next fence, Denman and Cotto both ping this, but have a look at Exotic Dancer coming at the back of your shot with AP. He hits this one a good old flick down the inside. See how high up how vertical AP's body gets as he's trying to get back off Exotic Dancer's front end, and we roll down to the tent. Again, they're just going a good even gallop. The race is building up and everybody jumps this well, but I think it's more from the next fence down, fence 11, that this race starts to change. Denman jumps that and lands still behind Neptune Collange. You saw Mick Fitzgerald catching a fresh hold there, Neptune, as he tries to put a bit of pressure on him to keep in front of Denman as we round the bend into the home straight for the first time. But it's this fence, it's where this race changes. And it changes for the better for Denman and never changes back for Cotto. If you watch Denman, he absolutely pings it, whereas Cotto gets in close and makes a bit of a mistake. And Denman jumps himself to the front and he never gets headed from there home. Pings it, Cotto gets in close. Now Denman's in front and going to the next fence. Again, whilst Denman is not quite as long at the next fence, he's very fast at it and Cotto's nowhere near as fast. And I have to kind of have ride him away from the back, but not enough to ride him away from it, but gets in fiddly. Now that gap is opening and I'm having to chase a little bit up the hill to not let that gap from Cotto to Denman get any wider. Denman is doing it all at his ease, whereas Cotto is just starting to go as fast as he can. Down to the fence, 13th fence. Denman actually, Sam Thomas goes for a big one here and Denman gets in close, but he's still very quick at it. And if you watch my body language on landing, watch Sam go into the fence where he gives Denman a squeeze and Denman shortens up and pops it himself. Sam is looking for one. Denman takes another stride. But watch Cotto landing. Watch me and Miji on landing. I switch my change my hands and have a look behind me. I'm more worried about the ones behind. I'm thinking, why aren't the ones behind me going by me? Because I can't go any better. Going to the water jump, everyone jumps it fine. And we both fly the next ditch. But there's a telling sign on landing because Sam has a look. That just short tells you how well he's going. Spots a stride, he pings it. I need it, I'm looking for it. I jump it, Sam has a peep to see how we're going. And he has the upper hand. We go to the 16th, both jumping well. But again, watch my body language on landing compared to Sam Thomas's. As soon as we land, hands up, change my hand, slap on the shoulder, trying to get Cotto to go forward. And this is a horse that was dominating the Tingle Creek 14 months earlier at the railway fences. At halfway in the Gold Cup, he's flat to the boards. But Denman's a very good horse. Again, Cotto pops that fence up the hill. And it's just, Everton was so effortless to Denman, whereas Cotto was struggling to stay on his tail. Fence at the top of the hill. Denman is brilliant at it. Cotto, again, in close. Doesn't, no fluidity. And I'm, at this stage, flat to the boards. Already slapping down the shoulder, squeezing along. Look at the difference in how the two horses are going. Fourth last, everybody hits this. Any one of the first four could have knuckled over here. The pressure's on, race is on. Denman hits it and nods. Neptune does, Cotto does, and Exotic Dancer all nod at it. Racing at it. And nobody really going that well to be able to slow down. But it's over now, Lydia. Denman just heads on down the hill. And he's not spectacular at any of these last three fences home. Sam sits quiet in there, picks his ears, gets in close. But the momentum, and away he goes. Cotto's flat out, Exotic Dancer nearly on the floor. But I think this shot is so Denman-esque now, off the bend. It's just the big horse head low on the ground and the size of his stride, the side on here, all the way to the second last. That is just Denman-esque, isn't it?
He is. He's just eating the ground, isn't he? He's a monster when he's in full flow.
Oh, he is. And goes to the second last. Again, gets meets it on a tight stride, but he's so quick at it. Now he's starting to come back a little bit mid to Cotto star between the last two fences, but Cotto gets in close to the last and I all bar fall off him at the back of it as he heads off to the left away from underneath me. Denman gets in close but too far in front. Cotto wraps it and I nearly slide off and he ultimately fades from there up as Neptune closes him down. But Denman on the day was brilliant.
I remember watching this being there and just the sound of the crowd, the intake of breath at the various points that you've pointed out, every time Sam Thomas turned around, you know, the point where it looked as though Demon was rolling on, the points where it looks as though Quarterstar might come back. Just the atmosphere was incredible. I rarely have I experienced a race that the whole crowd has experienced together in that way.
Yeah, and obviously when you're in it and you're out on the track, you don't experience any of that atmosphere. It's a din as such, and it's always with your concentration. Like from so early in the race, from jumping the first on the back, looking back, wondering where AP was, and was he going to come to me to help push me forward to try and keep tabs on them, man. Like Carter couldn't do it of his own accord. But my memory of it is so different. Mm. I don't remember the atmosphere or the noise or the din. None of that.
It's been characterised as a strongly run Gold Cup. I was mentioning about how well strung out they were earlier on, but you were making the counterpoint, I think, that actually there were two divisions of this race and there were some horses that just, you know, weren't able to keep up. Was it strongly run end to end, or was it a building pace?
I think it was a building pace. Neptune Clown's a very good horse in his own right. He won two Punchestown Gold Cups, but he built it. But it was the second last and the last first time round, two good jumps from Denman, two slow jumps from Cardo Star that put Cardo under pressure. But for me, for a horse that could win two Tinker Creeks, only 14 months previously or 16 months previously, I would have expected to have been able to stay on Denman's tail all the way to the third last. And then Denman outstay me or outgrind me.
Yes.
And I don't think, for me, that's why, as I said, and I don't believe the following year that Denman was a patch of the horse that he was in 2008. I don't think for two brilliant horses that they ever lined up in the one race and both had their A game.
I absolutely agree with that. It's a shame, isn't it? It was a vintage area, but they were never right at the top of their game when they actually clashed.
And I suppose for me, I would love if Cardo had turned up and brought his A game. And if he got beaten, so be it. Mm-hmm. But when you get beaten, having not run to your strengths, that was what was always disappointing about it for me.
And where in the race did you start to think, you know, he isn't on it today? At what point was it
the second last? Right. He couldn't look. He made loads of mistakes in his career, but when you squeeze to go forward early in the race, he would always have the pace and always be there for you. So it was that early in the race. And to be fair, I didn't think when I jumped the first in the back straight that I would finish second. It was only his honesty and his guts and his class that even got him to that close in the race. And the same could be said for Denman the following year. When you look at Denman in a similar position, how far out he was struggling, that it was only his class that done the same for him in 2009. They were brilliant horses, but ultimately, if we had them both clash on the one day when they both had their A game, we didn't get that.
And what is it you remember about Denman from when, I mean, you were, it was Sam Thomas on this day, but what is the key characteristic of his that you take away?
Denman's jumping. Denman, that Denman, as he got older, after he had the heart problem, it wasn't the same. But Denman as a novice chaser, when he won that Hennessy Gold Cup, those races, Denman's jumping was incredible. The power he had, but the ability, the speed that he could take a half stride and jump it was incredible.
Yeah, he had atrial fibrillation after this win and wasn't his best the following season, but he did come roaring back to put up one of the greatest weight-carrying performances of all time to win a second Hennessy. The following year, of course, Quarter Star regained his crown by 13 lengths from Demon, and he would go on to win five King Georges in total. And even Neptune Collange, who brought home a 1-2-3 for Paul Nicholls in this race, he would go on to win the 2012 Grand National. A great Gold Cup. Well, I hope you've enjoyed looking back on those four races with Ruby and me. I hope you've enjoyed it and managed to find some enjoyment in it as well, Ruby.
No, I did. Look, and I was lucky enough to have ridden Denman as well. He was an incredible horse. Incredible horse. But Cardo will always be close to my heart.
Quarter Star's obviously there's Desert Orchid, but I think Quarter Star is the greatest chaser I have seen.
Definitely the greatest I rode.
Well, I hope you've enjoyed this nostalgia, looking back at four great races. Thank you so much for choosing them. We've really enjoyed being able to look back on them. And now we are going to look forward to the 2021 Cheltenham Festival. You can join us on Road to Cheltenham. There is a show live from the course on Monday. Nick Luck will be joining Ruby and I, and we'll be trying to get some interviews for you and looking ahead to all of the races. You can also go to racingtv.com/Road to Cheltenham. You can find all of my columns. There'll be a column per day for the Cheltenham Festival next week. And of course, all the races will be live on Racing TV. Thank you very much for watching Road to Cheltenham. Don't forget to join us on Monday. For now, good night. ¶¶